Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, United States of America. You're with your, I'm here, you're here with your hosts, Jeremy Johnson and Travis Bull Johnson. I know Travis is running a little bit behind. He just jumped on now. I was prepared to play a song, Travis. How you doing tonight, brother?
All right. Can you hear me?
Yep. Yep, barely, but I can hear you. There you go.
So we're
all just we needed about 5 minutes is all we needed, and but I was prepared to cover that with this the song I was about to play. I thought, you know what? I'll introduce our radio show. I'll introduce us. Let them know that we're both like right on the edge of that 6 o'clock. I'm like within 3 minutes of parking, and I'll play that song, and I'll be able to park. Travis will be able to get on, and we'll be good to go to discuss the Fifth Amendment. But hey, we're here. Cutting it close, though, man, aren't we?
Yeah, well, it's just been a rough last few days on the farm, and nothing ever goes the way it's supposed to. And
farming and trucking is hand in hand. I heard that you lost Bob the Goat last night. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, that's kind of what...
Bob was a pygmy goat, and he fractured his femur somehow over the last couple weeks and just wasn't healing properly, and we brought him back in, and they put him in a tractor split yesterday, and because with the split they had on him, the bone, it kind of broke through the skin. And we lost him last night. We don't know exactly why, but I mean, he was a very unique goat in the fact that he was just very laid back, kind of with the surfer attitude. Didn't really run around, jump, whatever. He's just like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, that... Living on the farm, you never know what the hell's going to happen. But, ladies and gentlemen, tonight we're going to discuss the Fifth Amendment. We're going to jump into that here shortly. But I wanted to bring up something that the Constitutional Republic Party of Minnesota supports wholeheartedly, and that's coming up on Sunday, July 30th. And that's called the Ride for Freedom by Caravan of Patriots and Church of Dent. What that is... we're meeting at Detroit Lake City Park by the Pavilion on South Washington Avenue, and we're meeting at 12 p.m., and flags and T-shirts will be for sale. If you're interested in joining that on Sunday, July 30th, contact Carol Hexum at 218-849-2393. So how ready are you? Are you ready to go, or do you need about 3 minutes yet to get ready there?
I'm ready whenever you are.
Okay. I'm just getting off the exit here so I can park myself so that we can get more heavily into the discussion. So the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution creates its several constitutional rights. Hey, Bo, can you mute your phone? Got a lot of background noise going on. There we go. So the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution has it creates several constitutional rights. Basically, it's limiting government powers, focusing on criminal procedures. It was ratified along with 9 other articles in 1791 as part of the Bill of Rights. So I'm sure a lot of you have heard, you know, you'll be watching a court case or these higher-end court cases, you know, where people are famous or whatever, and they, oh, I plead the Fifth. Because they're, with they plead the fifth to protect themselves because they think maybe that, oh, I got to shut my GPS off. I tell you, we're a mess tonight. I apologize, ladies and gentlemen. This is what happens when you're either a trucker or a farmer. You're just trying to work and get stuff done, and it just didn't work out for us tonight. I know we've missed, you know, 3 weeks, and I really, truly apologize, but I'm like 2 minutes from being parked here, and then I'll be able to focus a little bit better here. But the Supreme Court has extended most I can't shut that dang thing off. It's going to drive me nuts. Give me once. I'm so sorry. I'm just pulling into the parking lot here now, and I know Bull is just wrapping up what he's doing too, and I can tell you a joke, but it probably wouldn't be very funny. But I know it's been a busy and hectic 3 weeks for all of us, honestly. We had the Constitutional Republic Party convention, and along with work on my end and Bull's end, it's just been absolutely insane. So I do apologize again, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to get to it right now. I'm parked. I pulled the air brakes. Everything is good. So the Supreme Court has extended most but not all rights of the Fifth Amendment to the state and local levels. The court furthered most protections of this amendment through the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. So, you know, a lot of these constitutional amendments tie in with other constitutional amendments. If you pay attention, and the fifth is a little complicated to me, and I know Bull can get on here and probably do a better job of trying to explain it than I can. But let me just read some of this here. One provision of the Fifth Amendment requires that felonies be tried only upon indictment by a grand jury, which the court ruled does not apply to the state level. Another provision, the Double Jeopardy Clause, provides the right of defendants to be tried only once in federal court for the same offense. So what that means is if you're accused of murder and they bring you to trial and they find you not guilty, and later on evidence comes out that, wow, you actually did commit the murder, you've already been tried for that murder. They can't come after you again. So that's what that kind of means. Or there could be other circumstances. I was just giving you one. Bull, do you want to jump on and like explain any of the stuff that I've talked about so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important that we realize the reasoning behind why they felt this amendment was necessary. I mean, we have to realize in those times and with the British you'd be arrested, and you'd be assumed as guilty, and then you would be, this is the same time, I guess, unless you could prove your innocence, you were guilty. But not only that, but they would basically force confessions out of people. So that's one of the reasons why they came back and said, okay, you know what, you don't have to say anything. Where I think we've lost some of our way on this now is so many people have come to the mindset of, if you decide not to say anything, then that means you're hiding something. So they immediately assume you're guilty because you're not proclaiming your innocence. And I think it's really a shame, because what we see in these courts, you see professional prosecutors who make a living out of getting people on the stand confused. And they're asking different questions and coming at you left and right and left and right. And there's times where a witness or a accused can get very confused and say something that is not true because they're confused. And and that's basically what the police used to do to people before they had that right to remain silent. what I think is very important to realize with the Fifth Amendment, it is one of the only rights that the authorities are required to ensure that you know you have these rights. We talked a little bit about 3 weeks ago in the Fourth Amendment when it comes down to the requirement to have a search warrant. Well, that's one of those rights. They don't have to tell you you have that right to demand a search warrant or to refuse them permission to search. But on the Fifth Amendment, they do have to give you these rights or inform you of these rights. The other one that the Fifth Amendment covers on is basically stating that they cannot take your personal property without giving you due compensation. That's one that we talk about sometimes when we're talking about eminent domain. And that's one of the ones that's my frustration. My frustration is because it actually gives them the permission to take your personal property without your consent, as long as they are giving you compensation.
You got into the eminent domain, but there's also, it provides the right of defendants to be tried. Okay, I already went through the double jeopardy. So the self-incrimination clause, that provides various protections against self-incrimination, including the right of an individual not to serve as a witness in a criminal case in which he or she is a defendant. And that's where you say, I explained that earlier, where you hear people say they plead the Fifth. It's often used to invoke the self-incrimination clause when witnesses decline to answer questions where the answers might incriminate them. In the 1966 case of Miranda versus Arizona, the Supreme Court held that the self-incrimination clause requires the police to issue a Miranda warning to criminal suspects interrogated while in police custody. And I'm sure you guys all have heard the Miranda warning. And if you haven't, I highly suggest that you Google search that, because there's many cases that have gone through courts where the charges have been dropped because they were not read their Miranda warning. That's basically when the cop, when they're deciding that they're going to place you under arrest, they tell you you have the right to remain silent, you have a right to, you know, have a right to an attorney, all that good stuff. I can't read. I don't know the thing by heart, but look up Miranda warning, and it'll tell you exactly what they're supposed to read to you if they're taking you into custody. This also allows the federal government to take private property for public use if the government provides just compensation. And that's where Dole was just talking about the eminent domain. And Bull, any time you want to jump in, you have something to say, just unmute and you can interrupt me. Don't worry about it, brother. I know a little bit about the Fifth, but not as much as I do about some of the other ones. But as I read, if there's something that you want to jump in and say, please do. So like the 14th Amendment, the Fifth Amendment includes a due process clause stating that no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. The Fifth Amendment's due process clause applies to the federal government, while the 14th Amendment's due process clause applies to state governments. The Supreme Court has interpreted the Fifth Amendment's due process clause to provide two main protections: procedural due process, which requires government officials to follow fair procedures before depriving a person of life, liberty, or property. And the second one is substantive due process, which protects certain fundamental rights from government interference. The Supreme Court has also held that due process clause contains a prohibition against vague laws and an implied equal protection requirement similar to the 14th Amendment's equal protection clause. So I always feel like there's gray area in the Fifth Amendment. The way they word it, you know, they can do this, but they can't do this. Well, they can't do that, but they can do this. It's like I get confused by the Fifth Amendment, honestly. And that's where I'm glad Bull's on here so he can explain things a little bit more clear than I could to you. But that's the gist of the Fifth Amendment. Go ahead, Bull.
Okay, yeah, no, I just, the Fifth Amendment doesn't really work alone, I guess you could say. I mean, it works in hand-in-hand with some of our other amendments, especially like when the Fourth, when they started talking about what it takes for them to develop a case against somebody. What I do think is important to remember, and you've touched this a little bit, and with the double jeopardy. Well, the problem with double jeopardy is it treats state and federal separately. So they could charge you on a federal case if there's federal jurisdiction, and if they fail on that, then if the state also shares some jurisdiction on that crime, they could still charge you. So you could get charged. I mean, you could have to go through it. There is situations where you have to go through it twice, which I don't agree with. I don't think it's fair. I mean, I think they should get one shot. This is all another one they use, and they've expanded on this, is, of course, we all know you have a right not to incriminate yourself. But what the courts have also found that this covers your spouse. So your spouse does not have to testify against you either. They're granted the same immunity as you are. But we still see this being abused. I think a prime example is the way district attorneys will basically force people to admit guilt to a lesser crime by threatening them with a higher crime. So they still kind of force those confessions by holding something else over their head, which is, again, one of the things this was supposed to prevent is forced confessions. So I'm really disappointed. And you see that all the time. I mean, they'll keep people in pretrial detention forever with these bails that are through the roof, so they can't meet bail. And basically, I mean, the only way you're going to get out is to admit to this lesser crime, and we'll say it's time served. And I think that goes against what the spirit of the Fifth Amendment is supposed to accomplish. What are that other?
Well, I mean, a prime example of that, Bull, is, like, look at the J6 defendants. You have the right to a speedy trial. There was no speedy about that, even though I know that some of them were trying different procedural things to, you know, I don't know what they were exactly trying to do or, you know, accomplish, but there were some of them that were held without bail for a very long time in very nasty conditions because we have crooked politicians, in my opinion. I'm listening to a lot more lately of that particular subject as of late, and the more I hear about it, the more it makes me cringe about what Nancy Pelosi and Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger and that whole J6 committee did to Americans that were just trying to get their voices heard. Were there some there that deserve to be arrested? Absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt, the end. But there's some of them there that they have prosecuted that were absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt, ridiculous prosecutions. It was all about intimidating the rest of the country, to basically say, if you ever try this again, you are going down just like these guys are, because they have not to get into a whole rant about J6, but they have Nancy Pelosi on video with her daughter, who is supposedly filming a documentary the same time where they both admitted that that wasn't an insurrection. But yet, the media ran with that real hard.
Mm-hmm.
See, our whole judicial system, ladies and gentlemen, our Constitution is supposed to protect us from a lot of different things, and it failed on January 6th for many, many Americans. I'll just say that. But go ahead, Paul.
There's still so much that they have not released to the public. There is still so much that even in these trials that is not being told to people because of other investigations that may be going on. But the catch is, if you're a defendant, you have to have access to all of this information to defend yourself. And they're withholding so much of that. There's so much of every one of those hearings should have been 100% in the public domain. Okay, and they should not have been restricted to very tight subjects within January 6th. It should have been everything about J6. Get all of the information out there. Let the people be informed. Okay? Let the people know exactly what happened, who was involved. Release all of the footage. Because there's a lot of footage that they took from individuals that have never seen the light of day. I mean, and the only way everything, or people are really going to be able to defend themselves, is to let all that footage out, because there's so much of it. The only way it's all going to get reviewed is if it's out there for everybody to see, where people can bring attention to different aspects of different videos. Because there's just not the manpower to really review every second of every video that they have. But yeah, I'm going to get off my soapbox on January 6th as well, because, I mean, there's just so much we don't know. I mean, the whole January 6th congressional investigation was very political or politicized. I mean, I was all for the investigation, but I wanted to see an investigation look at everything, put everything out there. And to me, if you were a defendant, you wanted that too, because that's what's going to show that you were not guilty of anything. Bring the light out to everything and let the chips fall where they may. And there are so many people, a lot of this includes the Trump inner circle that have not come clean on everything. That they are saying, no, we can't talk about the FBI of executive privilege. Well, you guys are as responsible for these guys being in jail as everybody else if you're not going to let the truth be known. If you're going to hide stuff that could perhaps exonerate your supporters, I got concerns with that.
Well, see, and that's part of the Fifth Amendment. It's called procedural due process. It's a legal doctrine in the United States that requires government officials to follow fair procedures before depriving a person of life, liberty, or property. That did not happen with any of the J6 defendants. They blatantly violated their Fifth Amendment rights. And nobody's doing a damn thing about it, and that's what really bothers me. Like, if they're guilty of something, okay, fine, prosecute them fairly according to our Constitution and charge them as such. But what they did to some of these guys, and men and women, is despicable. That's a light word. I'd like to go ahead.
I mean, the fact that it's still 2 years and not everybody has had their day in court.
Yeah.
I mean, that is part of the issue with our judicial system. And you know me, I hate taxes. I hate government spending my money. But if we're to the point now where we just don't have the judges, we just don't have the court systems to go through the backlog of people who are being charged with something, two things need to happen. Either you need to reduce the number of people you're charging, or you need to have a more robust court system that can handle it and give people their opportunity for a speedy trial. I mean, it's just,
let me read 10 guidelines for criminal due process. Number one, an unbiased tribunal. Number two, notice of the proposed action and the grounds asserted for it. Number three, the opportunity to present reasons for the proposed action not to be taken. Number four, the right to present evidence, including the right to call witnesses. Number five, the right to know the opposing evidence. And you touched on that, Bull. Number six, the right to cross-examine adverse witnesses. Number seven, a decision based only on the evidence presented. Number eight, opportunity to be represented by counsel. Number nine, a requirement that the tribunal prepare a record of the evidence presented. And number 10, a requirement that the tribunal prepare written findings of facts and the reasons for its decisions. Now, you go right back to number one, an unbiased tribunal. They could have easily moved the J6 trials out of D.C. area, but they did not. They would not. And that right there is an unbiased, in my opinion, an unbiased, or is a biased tribunal. They have a right to an unbiased tribunal, a jury trial, or whatever you want to call it. They should have had the right to move that out of D.C. because they knew they weren't going to get a fair trial in D.C.
So here's my question for you based on that. If I'm in small town Crookston, Minnesota, and somebody comes up here and comes on a shooting spree and kills a bunch of our residents, should the people here be allowed to be on their jury because they're the people who were affected? Or should they have the option to say, well, no, they can't get a fair trial there. We're going to move them to Texas where nobody's ever heard of it.
People might not like this answer, and I may be wrong and I may be right, but I'm just going to say it this way. I would have to say that that trial should be immediately moved out of the area because it's biased. You know what I mean? If people from the Crookston area knew so and so or so and so's cousin's brother's son got shot, how can you have a fair trial?
Mm-hmm.
So, in my opinion, that trial, the venue should be automatically moved away at the other corner of the state, down to Winona.
Yeah. Let's turn this around. Let's say the guy who shot all these people was some guy who's been bullied all his life by a lot of these people he shot. Should he be deprived of the people who know him, know what kind of person he really is, and know why he did what he did and understand why he did what he did, should he be excluded the opportunity to have them on their jury?
Well, I think that's what the attorney would look at in that case. He would look at, both sides of the aisle on that. Should I move it, request for it, to move it out of this area? Or do I want to take my chances to keep it here, knowing that he was a well-liked individual, or maybe not well-liked, but knowing his history in that area?
Because aren't we always told that we have a right to a jury of our peers?
Right. People that know you, or know of you, or know your history, know your... your moral character, but that doesn't always happen either. They say, well, these are people in your area that, yeah, but they don't know who I am. That's not a peer. That's not my peer.
That's kind of a
hook, line, and sinker too.
On the first example, we talked about this where he said, hey, you should be able to move this. Well, your peers aren't necessarily just the people who like you. Or think you're a good guy,
right?
So how isn't it his peers who are going to judge him locally one way or the other?
We'll say that again. I'm having a hard time hearing you tonight for some reason.
Isn't it his peers? In order for his peers to judge him, doesn't it have to be where he resides and where the crime took place?
But that I don't know. I'm sure that there's some kind of law or something on. I do know that they've moved trials out of the area because they felt, without a shadow of a doubt, that they would not get a fair jury trial.
Yeah.
That it was too biased.
And then you start getting into a lot of the rules of jurisdiction on who has, what courts have jurisdiction over a certain crime.
You're getting into a whole bunch of law talk that I have no clue about, and I'm not even going to sit here and I can tell you what I've seen and witnessed, but I don't know the actual procedural law, except for you are according to procedural due process, you are allowed an unbiased tribunal. So then that's when you start breaking down the law and what does that actually mean. There's so many aspects of the Fifth Amendment that have been fought in courts year after year after year for many, many, many years because there's so many like I said earlier, gray areas. Before we continue, I just want, if you are listening over the Internet and you want to call in and add to the conversation or you know something that we don't know and want to make us look stupid, by all means, call in and correct us. If we're wrong about something, absolutely. And that phone number is 516-387-1733. And, again, that phone number is 516-387-1733. And if you get through, just press the number 1. That'll let us know on my switchboard that you have something to say. And we'll bring you on air, and you can share your thoughts or your facts or whatever. And I always appreciate being proved wrong because then guess what? I learned something today. So, yes, by all means, call in and share your thoughts and opinions with us. And we always welcome that opportunity to have live callers. So let's discuss the number 2 of the procedural due process. It's called Notice of the Proposed Action. What's that?
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Notice of the Proposed Action and the Grounds Asserted for it. So they have to basically let you know what you're being charged with and under what grounds. Am I correct in with that, saying that way, Bull?
I would assume so. Again, neither one of us are lawyers, so...
Right, and that's the thing with the Fifth Amendment. Again, this is more of a lawyer conversation to have, and I'm no lawyer. I know the law a little bit here and there, but I you put me up in front of a judge and jury, you're not going to win that case. But this is just our interpretation of what we believe it means. And again, if you find yourself in a position of where you're in need of somebody that can interpret the law, by no means don't tell them, hey, I need a, give me an hour so I can go back and look at the constitutionalist so I can get their opinion. We're just sharing the Constitution with you and what it says and then our interpretation of it. Doesn't mean our interpretation is right. And if we're wrong and you know we're wrong, call in and correct us. That way everybody learns. But yeah, so my interpretation of the number 2 is notice of the proposed action, which what crime they're committing you of, and then the grounds asserted for it. How are they charging you with second degree murder? I mean, what did you do to be arrested for second degree murder? Then that's where your case file will come in. And on the night of January 8th in 1982. Jeremy walked into a Fuddruckers and, stabbed a guy in the ribs. They're going to give you that why you are being charged with what you are being charged with. That's my assumption or my interpretation of that anyway, of the procedural due process. Would I be pretty close there, do you think, Bull?
I think so. I think you're probably right on there. Again, they have to tell you exactly what you're being charged with.
Right. So the number 3 procedural a rule into procedural due process procedurally. Yeah, that one. Okay, so this one is the opportunity to present reasons for the proposed action not to be taken. Now that one, that when I read that one, I'm just like, wait a minute, what? The opportunity to present reasons for the proposed action not to be taken. So that would be your defense, I would assume.
Yep.
So when the prosecution says this is what we're charging you for and this is why, then the defense would have the opportunity to present reasons why the proposed action should not be taken.
Yeah, well,
so
you should,
again,
you know,
that's
like in case of self-defense.
Yeah,
you
can make
them.
You can.
I did it because I was in fear of my life.
What's that?
It's like, yes, I did shoot Joe Blow, but I did it because he was shooting at me first, and I feared for my life.
Right, and basically, you can have an argument with the prosecutor as a defendant or a defender or defense attorney. You guys can have like a, you know, a pre-trial or whatever you want to call it, argument, and show each other, basically not show all of your evidence, but kind of show your evidence. The defense is probably going to show their evidence a little bit more, unless the prosecution has a, you know, it's a slam dunk case. But if the defense has witnesses that with video that shows he was clearly acting in self-defense, and the prosecution hasn't seen that yet, and that gets brought to light, prosecution is more than likely going to try for a plea bargain, or he's just going to drop the case entirely. That's
right.
Kind of what usually happens in cases like that. And that's just one example. So, number four, the right to present evidence, including the right to call witnesses. And see, that go back to the J6. When Bull said they should have had a right to all 16,000 hours of that surveillance video, or however many hours it was, their lawyers or the attorney should. And maybe that's what they're fighting for, some of these guys that haven't seen a courtroom yet after 2 years. But you have the right to defend yourself with all available evidence. And this judge in D.C. has not allowed some of this evidence to go into the courtroom. I'm based off of, I want to say, some FBI influence, if I'm not mistaken, claiming that there's still an ongoing investigation. Well, I don't give two shits about your ongoing investigation if I am the defendant there and you're threatening me with 10 years of prison time. I want my evidence that could exonerate me and make me a free man. But they're not letting these guys have the procedural due process. And that's where I have a problem. Again, if these guys are guilty of something and all of the evidence shows that they are guilty of it, then prosecute them. I will not say a word. But the fact that you're trying to hide evidence and trying to just stick it to them without their procedural due process, that is not okay. That is not a free country. Now you're living in a banana republic.
Well, no,
I'm sorry.
Even when they do get access to it, they make them drag it out so long before they'll give it to them. It violates their ability to get a speedy trial because they're having to spend so much time and effort building their defense.
Yeah, basically what they're doing is they're mentally breaking you. The one guy even hung himself in his jail cell that was awaiting trial. That's what they're doing to these guys. That's not right.
Yep. And, you know, and that's what prosecutions do across this country every day, to force plea bargains.
I didn't hear you there again, Bully. Do you have a headset on? Or?
I do not.
I'll
tell you what, I'm going to mute you for a second because I'm actually still in the car, but I'm in my driveway, so let me go ahead and mute you, and I'll go inside and get on the speaker on my phone. That's how I normally talk to you.
Yeah, okay. There we go. Okay, he's going to mute, and then he'll be back here shortly. But, yeah, what's happening with the J6 defendants? You know, I'm sorry to say it this way, but I'm going to say it this way because it's true. I see the left, the liberals, and they're all like, They're insurrectionists. You hear that word all the time. Insurrectionists, insurrectionists, insurrectionists. And not all of them. Not all the left, not all the liberals. I don't want you to use that as a blanket accusation. But I've seen it with my own two eyes, heard it with my own two ears. These some of these radical nut jobs, or maybe some of them are uninformed or uneducated. I'm not sure which they are, but they keep on using and repeating mainstream media talking points, and that's bad. When I hear people using mainstream media talking points, that means indoctrination and the brainwashing is working in this country, and it's very clear that it has. And that now, right away, if somebody from the left of the Liberal Party is listening, they're going to think, "Oh yeah, okay, Republican, like you're not indoctrinated." Well, I got bad news for you. I'm not a Republican either. So that really kills your argument, and it kind of helps mine, because I was just going to go to the sentence of my next point, is that there's people on the far right or conservatives that will defend the J6 defendants at all costs, saying they had every right, they, you know, blah, 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 blah. Well, that's where we're different, because do they have a right to peacefully assemble? Absolutely. And for the most part, that day they were. But they do not have a right to vandalize or be violent. And I know that there was a faction of BLM and Antifa there for a fact. I know that for a fact now, after watching the Senate hearings, that were antagonizing the crowd of Trump supporters. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that all the Trump supporters are innocent, and you got to look at BLM and Antifa, because it wasn't quite that way. But I do want to say that there were antagonizers there. And this is getting off subject. I'm sorry, but it all ties into how the J6 defendants are being treated, and their constitutional rights are being trampled on. Basically, that's the point I was trying to make. I hear that Bull's back. Let's try to hear you now, Bull.
Yeah, can you hear me okay now, or is it saying better?
Oh, yes, man. That's 1,000 times better, man. I can actually hear you.
Sorry about that, man.
No problem, man. Now we can have a really good conversation, because I was having a hard time understanding what you're saying before. But, so the right, number five was the right to know opposing evidence. So number six is the right to cross-examine adverse witnesses. So when somebody's accusing you of something, and let's say prosecution brings up John Smith, he's a witness for the prosecution, and he's seen the defendant punch this guy in the nose. And so the prosecution will ask a barrage of questions and make the defendant look like, oh yeah, he was the aggressor. Now the defense's job is to get up there and talk to John Smith and make John Smith out to be a liar or an exaggerator, or find some kind of link between whoever this guy that got punched, like he's playing favorites kind of deal. Like he would maybe, you know, lie about it a little bit to help his buddy or help an acquaintance. That's why it's so important that you have the right to cross-examine adverse witnesses. I think my explanation on that is pretty good, wouldn't you say, Bull, or do you got something to add to that?
No, I would say, but I do have something to add. I mean, how does this affect the government's use of confidential informants? Shouldn't, if you're on trial, shouldn't you have the ability to actually interrogate these confidential informants, to actually learn about them, are they getting paid to inform on me? And I think a lot of times, I mean, they protect these confidential informants. And the thing is, if they are, then they should not be allowed to use the evidence or whatever information that these informants bring to them. Because I think to do so is a violation of the constitutional rights.
And that goes right back to the J6 defendants with the FBI.
Yep.
The FBI informants that were in the crowd, that they admitted were in the crowd. But they're not allowed to talk to them?
No, exactly.
So, and you can't tell me that the information they got from those agents were not used to build the cases. So, I mean, so the I've got some heartburn with that again, because a lot of times these confidential informants, I mean, they've done some things in their own past that they may not be proud of, that they're trying to get rid of by throwing somebody else under the bus or into the grease. They're trying to build value in what they can provide to get themselves out of trouble. And so many of these prosecutors and everything else, they just want to close cases. They want to say, yeah, we caught somebody. And if we use information from this guy who's got a reason to maybe make something up or get somebody else in trouble just to help us out so they look better, I mean, we should be, the defendants should be allowed to know that. They should be allowed to know all the specifics on these witnesses that are being used against them that may have a relationship with law enforcement.
And see, that's kind of why I brought up the J6 defendants, because I have seen a lot of procedural due process violations, in my opinion. What baffles me, and maybe I'm not hearing the whole story because they keep a tight lid on what is happening, you know, procedurally, basically in the D.C.
Right.
court. Basically, it's biased news coverage by the mainstream media that are obviously, at this point, without a shadow of a doubt, are not defending, but covering for the Uniparty, the Republican and Democrats. I hate to use this term, but swamp creatures, because that's what they are. They're career politicians have corrupted the system.
And, you know, and this frustrates me so much is, and we've seen this with the case with President Trump, is these leaks that get out. Well, the only people who could be leaking this information are people who are involved in the court case. And they do so with the idea of swaying public opinion. And I just when I see stuff like that, I mean, I'm like, how is that actually justice? How does that actually provide a defendant an opportunity to defend themselves when you're intentionally leaking stuff to make them look bad that have not been proven, that have not been subject to a cross examination?
Basically, in my opinion, that's jury tampering. It's just trying to sway the jury one way or the other.
Exactly, because, I mean, especially on a case as big as President Trump's, everybody's going to have heard about it. So, I mean, you're not going to be able to get a bunch of witnesses, I mean, a jury out there who are bringing in a blank slate. Because as we're going to get to in a little bit later with one of these other principles, they are only supposed to rule on what is presented at the court.
That's correct.
But for human beings, it's impossible for us to completely disregard something else we may have heard or we may think we already know. I mean, because that's always going to flavor our judgments, our opinions.
Right, and that leads us to number seven. It's a decision based only on the evidence presented.
But
that you touched right on that.
Yeah. But here's the problem with that. Judges are deciding what could be presented and be used. So if you can only judge, make it on what is presented to you, but you have a judge up there who's deciding, well, we can't allow this for one this reason or that reason, are you really able to provide a robust defense? If you have the judge there going, well, no, we can't let that information out because it could hurt this innocent somewhere else. I mean, and we see stuff like that when they disallow information because it may be prejudicial one way or the other. Well, information is information. The jury should have access to all of it and be able to weigh it in if you're going to give a fair trial.
Right, it's basically cherry-picking evidence.
Yeah, I mean, you may not be able to list the, okay, Officer Joe Blow is on the stand, okay? Well, out of the last 50 people he arrested, 49 of them were acquitted. Well, is the judge going to allow a defense attorney to say that? Say, hey, all these people, this guy arrests people left and right, but none of them are ever found guilty. Well, no, they're not going to allow that because it would be prejudicial to making this guy look innocent. Well, if the guy's a shitty cop and you can never make anything stick, shouldn't the jury be allowed to have that information? Because it speaks to the credibility of the witness.
Right. They should have every piece of evidence.
Yep. And so, I mean, and I'm trying to think of some specific cases that I've seen recently. And, of course, as soon as I want to say it, I mean, my mind went completely blank about specific cases. But, I mean, you'll see them in the news all the time when you say, okay, they judge will not permit this or will not permit that. And it's like there shouldn't be those limitations if it pertains to the case. If it has a legitimate pertainment to the case, it needs to be allowed regardless because that defendant's constitutional right to a fair trial should be paramount.
Exactly. No, and so number eight is the opportunity to be represented by counsel. So if you're accused of, well, let's just say murder, or even a simple shoplifting charge, and you plead not guilty, you don't even have to plead. You can go to the omnibus hearing, I believe they call it, and you can ask for a court-appointed attorney, and then they have to provide you one, and then they'll ask you what,
yeah,
you know, how much money you make and all that stuff, and they determine a fair price as far as what you can repay them. Like, I remember I had to use an attorney many, many, many years ago, like 15, 20 years ago. And based off my income, they charged me $250 for that attorney throughout the process. So, but you have the right to a court-appointed attorney. Now, I'll be the first one to tell you that 9 times out of 10, the court-appointed attorneys suck. They're working for the county, or they're working. You're almost better off researching the law and trying to defend yourself, in my honest opinion. But when you don't have money, you don't have money, and you got to have counsel. So that one's a pretty easy one to decipher and explain, that you do have the right to an attorney, even if you can't. And I think the whole line is, if you can't afford one, one won't be appointed to you. Number nine, it's a requirement that the tribunal prepare a record of the evidence presented.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's your court reporter, I think.
I think that's kind of what I was, yeah. When you're in a trial, jury trial, or, you know, every word that is said is typed out. There's a transcript of the whole hearing. So, and I think they used that in the, what's that kid out in Wisconsin that defended himself against the rioters? You know who I'm talking about. Yeah, Rittenhouse.
Kyle Rittenhouse.
I do believe it, in his trial, the jurors asked for that transcript a couple different times,
yep,
while they were deliberating. I do remember that. So that's the reason they do that. So when the jurors are deliberating and they may not have remembered this or that, they ask for those transcripts so they can go back and get exactly what was said and what context it was said.
Yep, so that they,
excuse me,
so they can remember everything and,
right, and come to a fair judgment.
Yep.
And I'll tell you something. No, there's a, again, this goes on the left. The party politics, the partisan lines again, with the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. I really thought, in my humble opinion, I listened to that, a good part of that, a jury trial, and I thought that those jurors did an outstanding job being fair and impartial. I really thought they did an outstanding job. I don't know. What's your thoughts on that? Did you pay attention to that one?
I did, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was another one of those cases where the judge did prevent a lot of information from coming out that could have helped Rittenhouse.
Yes, he did.
There was a lot of things that he did that kind of spoke of the just spoke of the mindset of some of the people involved to determine, was there a legitimate, did he face a legitimate threat? And there's a lot of information that they withheld that I think would have made it even a simpler decision than it was.
Well, and you know what really bothers me is that the mainstream media in that Kyle Rittenhouse case, this one really just irks me. They had the left so wound up because the judge's phone rang and he'd forgotten to silence it, and his phone ringtone was "God Bless America," and they said that judge should be thrown off that case. I'm like, are you kidding me? His phone rang and it's saying "God Bless America," and he should be thrown off the case. What do you want it to say? You want it to have the national anthem of China, the CCP? Would that make you happy? It blew my mind when I heard that. I just couldn't believe it. But that's how influential the mainstream media is, ladies and gentlemen. When, if you don't know what your constitutional rights are, and you just go based off of what the mainstream media tells you, they will cloud and darken that Constitution any chance they get, as long as it fits their narrative. You have to remember ladies and gentlemen.
And unfortunately, we no longer have, for the most part, an independent media. Media companies, depending on who their owners and their stockholders are, have biases. Okay, they are going to look at a particular narrative that they are basically almost a public relations firm for either the left or the right. And it makes it harder
for us
as Americans to find out what's really happening, because all of our small town independent news sources who with a independent thought have basically been gobbled up by these conglomerate media organizations. And it's really a shame because that's what would have that's what we would use to be able to figure out what's going on, but everything is painted with a brush of biases, and it's not really fair to the American people.
No, because you're not getting the real truth. You're not getting the raw truth. And for you ladies and gentlemen that are listening, we have like a 1 or 2 second delay. So, you know, Bull will start talking, and I won't catch him talking until he's been talking for about a minute or two, or a second or two, and then I'll, like, say something, and he'll think I'm trying to interrupt him. We're not trying to do that. It's that stupid delay that we have on this Blog Talk Radio. It sucks, but we just kind of fight through it. But, yeah, no, you're not getting the truth anymore from the mainstream media. You have to look outside the box. You have to dig. You literally have to look for the news now. I found a very wide array of people that I follow on social media, on Facebook. My big Twitter account got banned. I got back on my small, and I got a small one now. And I followed back the people that I remember that are, you know, give good information. But I go to Telegram. I go to Getter. I go to YouTube. I go all over to find my information. And when I find something, I'm like, ooh, what's this? Then I start looking around for it. And by God, man, you find out a lot of stuff if you just hang around on social media and just pay attention to different posts. TikTok's another good one that you find really great information from. And a lot of constitutional stuff on TikTok that explains a lot of the Constitution and different cases. So I just urge everybody to shut your TVs off. Honestly, I haven't watched mainstream news for the last time I watched it was because I was on Fox and Friends in the morning. That's the last time that I watched it. Other than that, I don't even watch it. I don't want to watch it. I don't care to watch it because I know they're lying to you. It's all propaganda. But anyway, moving on, number 10 of the procedural due process is it's a requirement that the tribunal prepare written findings of fact and the reasons for its decisions or for its decision. So basically, what I think that means is they have to have proof of evidence. And am I deciphering this correctly, or am I a little off on this one? I feel like I'm off on this one, Bull.
I think, again, you're talking on there, they're talking about a tribunal, which is not necessarily a jury. This would be like, this is just my opinion, of course, if you appealed it and went to the Circuit of Appeals Court, they have to say what they found and why. Yes, I mean, we found, yes, you got a fair trial because of this. No, we agree you did not get a fair trial because of this. It's like you see in the Supreme Court when their rebuttals and their rulings. I mean, I think that pertains more to judges than juries.
I hope we don't have any like big shot attorneys listening to our show right now, because I'm sure he's sitting back with a half bottle or a half glass of scotch and he's laughing his ass off. Listen to these two idiots.
Well, you the problem is it probably starts a full bottle, and the more he listens to us talk, the more he drinks of it just to try to make sense of what we're saying.
Hey, we're just here to entertain you, that's all. Hey, I did find the Miranda warning, by the way. So let me just read that real quick, because we got through the procedural process there. So I wanted to go to the Miranda warning. So the Miranda warning is, now if you get pulled over, arrested, DWI, or whatever, and they're going to place you under arrest, here's what they have to say to you. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can be used against you in court. You have the right to talk to a lawyer for advice before we ask you any questions. You have the right to have a lawyer with you during questioning. If you cannot afford a lawyer, one will be appointed for you before any questioning if you wish. If you decide to answer questions now without a lawyer present, you have the right to stop answering at any time. And that goes back to, so I was advised by an attorney at one time. I was accused of a crime. And I said, what do I do here? It was clearly self-defense. He says, the police want to talk to you, or want to talk to me. He says, you go in and tell them that you do not have any statement to make at this time until you obtain an attorney. I said, that's all I got to do? Yep. So I went in there, and the police officer brought me back to the room, and he sat me down with a piece of paper and a pen. He goes, okay, write down your statement. I said, I have nothing to say at this time until I obtain an attorney. Okie dokie, no problem. Well, we will send this over to the county attorney, and we will get back to you if charges are filed. And that was it until the charges were filed, and then I had to get an attorney. So that's how that works. You don't have to tell them anything. And honestly, no matter the situation you're in, I would highly suggest that you don't tell them anything until you get an attorney. Let the attorney do the talking. They know the ins and outs of the law. They know certain phrases that you should or should not say. So know your rights. You don't have to tell them anything. Say, I have no comment right now until I, retain an attorney. So that's all you have to do, just so you know your rights. And I know that one for a fact because I've been through it. Yes, I'm a law-abiding citizen. Do you have anything to add to that, Miranda, on the Miranda rights?
No, I mean, you're right on there. And, I mean, most people you talk to, attorney-wise, will tell you, I mean, be very polite. Don't be a jerk about it, but say, you know what? I mean, there's a lot of things going on in my head right now. I need time to process it and speak to an attorney. I don't have anything to say right now.
Yep. That's what I did, too. just really polite. I just said, I'm not going to make a statement at this time until I obtain an attorney or retain an attorney. He was, okie dokie, no problem. We'll get back to you. And we shook hands, and out the door he went.
Yeah, I mean, because again, these guys, especially when you talk about the police officers who are bringing you into that back room, they make a living out of pulling stuff out of people. And a lot of them are great in the fact that they are looking for the truth. But at the same time, there are a lot of people, just like every profession, they have people who are willing to get ahead by any means necessary. They have their own beliefs, okay? You know what? They may believe you did it, even without a shred of evidence, so they're going to do everything they can to get you to say something that gives them a reason to dig deeper. And that's what people need to realize, is what they say in the interview is basically what these police are going to do to dig deeper. It's going to be the excuse they're going to use to look harder at you. Especially if you misspeak one thing and you get time wrong, and they can prove you are not where you said you were at a certain time. Well, you know what? You just thought that was what the time were, but as far as they're concerned, now you were lying. Well, why were you lying? What are you hiding? And they just dig deeper, and they use that as a justification for keeping the spotlight on you. So it's best.
And they also look at your body language, and they look at your facial expressions, and yeah, they're trained in all of that. So your best is to go in there calm, cool like a cucumber, and say,
yep,
I have nothing to say at this point until I retain an attorney. And they cannot harass you after that. If they do, that's tampering with a witness.
Yep.
I mean, they can't do that.
And here's the catch. I mean, at that point, they have two choices. They have to either charge you or let you go. At that point, that's all they can do. Now, the more you talk, the more you can give them a reason to try to hold you. But again, and once you say, I want that attorney, they have that's their options, charge you or let you go. And you can ask them, hey, am I being detained? Nope. Have a nice day. I mean, it's
On a different note
let's once again put out our disclaimer, neither me or Jeremy are attorneys. Do not take
what we say.
And use it as legal advice, okay? We are not attorneys.
Yes.
This is our personal opinion. This is not professional legal advice. If you're in a situation where you need professional legal advice, get a professional, not us.
Yes. We're two guys just trying to go over the Constitution with you and decipher the Constitution with you. And again, if you're listening, you can call in. And the guest call-in number is 516-387-1733. 516-387-1733. Just make sure you press the number 1 once you get through. That way lets me know that you want to get on air and talk. But if you are listening and you want to come on and correct us on something or any of that, you're more than welcome to. We can take constructive criticism or correction. I can be corrected. I know Bull can, and that's the only way we all learn. But I want to move on to eminent domain since Bull was talking about that earlier, and we kind of had a hard time hearing him earlier, but we got him now. I mean, we can hear him clear as a whistle, clear as a bell. Eminent domain, it's the power of the state, provincial, or national government to take property for public use. It does not include the power to take and transfer ownership of private property from one property owner to another private property owner without a valid public purpose. This power can be legislatively delegated by the state to municipalities. There we go. Just had to smack myself in the back. Government subdivisions, or even to private persons or corporations. When they are authorized by the legislature to exercise the functions of public character. So the most common uses of property taken by eminent domain have been for roads, government buildings, and public utilities. Many railroads were given the right of eminent domain to obtain land or easements in order to build and connect rail networks in the mid-20th century. A new application of eminent domain was pioneered, in which the government could take the property and transfer it to private third party for redevelopment. This was initially done only to a property that has been deemed blighted or a development impediment. On the principle that such properties had a negative impact upon surrounding property owners, but was later expanded to allow the taking of any private property when the new third-party owner could develop the property in such a way as to bring in increased tax revenues to the government. So I'll stop there. There's more, but I'll stop there, and we'll kind of go over that. I know a lot of people aren't well-versed on eminent domain, and I've seen signs along the interstate about stop eminent domain, and I have a cousin that lives in Illinois that farms a little over 4 or 5,000 acres, I believe, at this point. But they wanted to run train tracks right through the middle of their farmland. And bottom line is, when the government decides that they're going to do something like that, you're in for a battle, because they'll tie your ass up in court with lawyer fees and everything else for years and years and years if you just don't give them your way. That is what I call corruption, in my opinion. But and maybe I'm just being a selfish jerk too. I don't know, but I don't like that. That eminent domain stuff. There's a lot of gray area, and it's a fine line to walk, because it ruins a lot of some people's lives. You know, they overtake waterways and everything. So go ahead, Bull.
Well, I mean, I've got a major issue with it. Okay, I mean, and it's one of the things that's hard for me, being a constitutionalist, because I just don't believe it's right. Yet the Constitution allows for it. Now, what the Constitution allows for is for the public use. And what we have seen repeatedly recently is the government will take this for the benefit of a private company because they feel that betters the situation for everybody. A prime example is pipelines. I mean, pipelines, you are taking these pipelines. And a lot of Americans are, hey, yeah, we need these pipelines. These are great. These are great for jobs. This is great for American energy independence. Well, the problem is you're taking somebody else's land to be able to do these pipelines. Is that right? Okay. Because there are some people whose land say, no, you know what? You can't use my land for a pipeline. This is my family's land. I own it. No. Should the government have the right to take that land, give it to a private corporation, or allow a private corporation to use it and make money off of it for the purpose of being able to, again, further make money because by moving oil from point A to point B? Because the rest of us want cheaper oil. Is that right? Do we really believe that is in the public use, that the public has more right to that land than the owner of that land does?
You know, somebody, and I won't say their name, but they brought up a good point. I was actually just going to mention that about these oil pipelines going over native land.
Yep.
Now, I don't want to get into the whole, the whole political aspect of indigenous people and native lands, but let's state facts. So one fact is that the indigenous people were here before us, right? And they call us colonizers. We come in and we stole their land, and then we gave some of their land back, which is the present name reservations. Now, I looking at it from an outsider, and looking at trying to be neutral and fair. I find it kind of insulting that they go through native lands, even though it cuts off miles and miles of pipeline. But I find it almost insulting that they go through native lands after they're kind of limited to the land that they have after you kind of took the land that they had. So,
that's just my opinion on that,
of course.
And here's what makes that even more complicated, Jeremy, is that often the – and I'm not saying this is always the case, but in many cases, the tribal leadership approves of the pipeline because they can use that money to support the tribes, but the individual tribe members disagree. And, I mean, that's
yes,
a lot. They get into a lot of internal tribal politics involved in that. But I'm trying to remember which – it wasn't – I want to say it was one of the Keystones pipelines that were basically shut down due to it was actually a decision by the Biden administration that shut it down. But it was because it would have resulted in a lot of pipelines going through a reservation that had said no, we don't want this. This is BS. And that particular that was not the reason the Biden administration shut it down. But at the same time, I was glad did shut it down. Because if they had not done so, it would have violated the rights of these native tribes to their own land that they had been shrunk down to. I wrote an editorial about it to the local papers on there. And of course, I had a couple of detractors getting mad at me because, again, these pipelines mean jobs, but are the jobs worth taking something away from your neighbors? Are those jobs worth stealing from your neighbors to pay for those jobs? Because that's what this is. That's what eminent domain is. It is stealing from your neighbors for the benefit of somebody else. And when it comes time to roads and railways, I can sort of understand it. But when it comes down to benefiting private corporations, I've got a lot to say about the matter. When I was running for Congress, that was one of the things that I ran on, was stating that I would work on a bill to define public use, as it refers to in the Constitution, as only being something that is subject to a public thoroughfare or something like that. It could not ever be used for the benefit of a private corporation. And you mentioned it earlier when you were talking about the usage of it, and by taking property from these blighted communities, the Billy Shopping Center, because that's for the common good, because that will raise everybody else's property values. Well, again, that's not right. You're stealing from one person to benefit a bunch of other individuals, and that's not necessarily the common good. A good friend of mine, Spike Cohen, ran for vice president under the Libertarian Party the last election, and Spike has basically made a career out of since that election with fighting issues like this across the country. I mean, there was a And I'm trying to remember what town it was in. It was a town in the southeast where they were basically trying to close down some homeless shelters and a home for mentally challenged adults to build a city park. And I mean, it made all kind of news. And eventually, with Spike's help, it basically got thrown out. But yeah, they were trying to use eminent domain to throw these people out on the streets so they could build a park there for area beautification. How does anybody think that's right? But it wasn't until Spike got involved and got national news involved that basically that idea got shot down. Those are the cases. That's the case we heard about. How many times is this going on throughout the nation that we don't ever hear about it? I talked briefly to a gentleman on the phone yesterday from Colorado, and he's somebody who lost part of his land to eminent domain, and we didn't get into the specifics of it, but it is basically what lit a fire under his rear end to start really digging into the authorities of the government and are they valid authorities. And I think the government needs to realize is when you force people off of their land that they have worked for, that they have done, you're basically creating an enemy. You have basically created somebody who now has a reason to go after you and to hate you. And they keep on doing it. I mean, I'm sorry, it got me off on a tangent there just because the whole eminent domain thing and the way it's been abused is really a pet peeve of mine and goes against everything I think it is to be an American.
No,
to
I
take somebody's
agree with you.
Property. To take something. I mean, that's owning your own piece of land. I think is a lot of the American dream. That is yours. Okay, you've worked for this. This is something that you own. The government should not be able to just say, "I'm going to take this from you because I think I know how to use it better than you do." And that's basically what they're doing. Is they're saying, "Hey, we've got a better use for your land than you have, so we're going to take it." What does that sound like? That sounds like central planning. What is central planning a part of? Communism. So, hey, that's my little tangent of going on there. But I mean, to a great effect, I mean that is what eminent domain is. It's central planning. And that's not the United States is supposed to be about.
No, and it's good to go off on those because it lets people hear what you truly feel about a certain issue. And I think everybody, you know, me included, I'll go off on a tangent sometimes on certain subjects that I'm passionate about also. It lets people get a little bit more intimate with who you are, you know, as a person. Now I see where his stance is. You know what I mean? That's always a good thing. There's one thing I wanted to mention about that eminent domain, though. Let me just read this part because I think you're probably going to go off on another tangent here, and that's okay. I hope you do because it's good. Some jurisdictions require that the taker make an offer to purchase the subject property before resorting to the use of eminent domain. Now, here's the kicker. However, once the property is taken and the judgment is final, the condemner owns it in fee simple and may put it to uses other than those specified in the eminent domain action. Now, that is a bunch of BS. So you took my land, you got your final judgment, and you're supposed to put a pipeline in there. Oh, we're going to scratch the pipeline. We're going to build the pipeline over on this guy's land. We're going to take his land for that pipeline instead. Instead, now we're going to put, like you've made an example, a shopping mall, or we're going to do this. No. That's when they do that. When they pull that, now, yeah, that's corrupt. It's corrupt to begin with. I agree with you on that, Bull. I think taking people's land because, you know, you have a pipeline or a railway that's going to benefit a corporation or it's going to increase the government's tax dollars, dude, no. Why do I have to suffer to increase your tax revenue? Where's my tax revenue increase?
Yep.
No, I don't get nothing. You get it all. No, even though it's in the Constitution, Bull, I have to follow what the Constitution says, but I think they've distorted what the meaning of that eminent domain has meant throughout the years, and have benefited the corporations and the federal government.
Yes.
I think they've really taken advantage of it.
And we have not even touched on some of the biggest abuses of eminent domain. I mean, there are cases, especially in the civil rights era, where eminent domain was used to break up areas of black prosperity. And they said, nope, we're going to put a four-lane highway right through, a four-lane bridge right over this, so it bypasses this area and brings them to this other area instead. Our history is ripe of stuff like that. And I know this is a touchy subject for a lot of people, but when you hear minorities talk about institutional racism, stuff like that is what they're talking about, is about how these whole communities were starting to prosper, and the government used their abilities to stop that so that somebody else may prosper of a different economic class instead. And they never had the chance to make that generational wealth. When they talk about structural racism, that is the kind of thing that they're talking about. And I really think that it's something that we need to at least acknowledge existed. And this is, again, another tool the government used to keep Americans down for one group to benefit over another. And it's not always due to race. It's due to make the rich richer. Okay? I mean, the money talks. And that's part of my whole thing when I was running is I wanted to take that power away from the government to be able, so they could no longer utilize it for stuff like this. That's why I want small government. With small government, that's less damage that they can do to the American people. That's less damage that they can do through policies to hurt minorities or to hurt the people who are not the favored class at that moment, whether it's urbanites or whether it's the rural people. We should just not allow the government that much power to have that much control over our lives, which is, again, why I helped start the Constitutional Republic Party.
Yeah, that's in closing. I can't stay on too late tonight. I've been up since 3 o'clock this morning, and I got to get up at 4 o'clock again tomorrow morning. And I'm like over here yawning, and my eyes are watering. I'm like, and I know we were late to begin the show, but I think we got through a good portion of the Fifth Amendment. I'll let you have closing thoughts here, but that's how tired I am. I forgot what I was even going to say. Jeez Louise, man. Oh, I know what it was. Pete Buttigieg said, he said the highways are racist. I don't like the fact that this administration comes out and everything's racist. Everything's racist. Oh, there's not enough trees. There's not enough. But in all reality, honestly, and truthfully, I've been on some of these. I drive all over the country. I've been on some of these highways in the inner cities, and they were built in the early, mid 50s or early 60s, right in that era of civil rights movement. And when that, eminent domain was going on. And they literally built some of these highways right through what now are ghettos, these interstates. They go right over the top of the ghettos, right through the middle of them. But back in the 50s, if you look at that was a thriving community of African-American folks back in those days. Now, because of eminent domain and how they've divided cities, they've really, the government can only blame themselves for what they've done, really. I mean, they try to pit us against each other, and in all reality, it's not us that are against each other. It's the government that, you know, pushes their weight around, the bully, the, you know, the big bully. And they picked on a certain ethnic group or a group of color back in the day. And they you know, Martin Luther King had marches for it and tried to get equality for that purpose, you know, not to have to ride in the back of the bus or the front of the bus or whatever it was, you know, to be able to use, this, you know, the same water fountain and not to get on a whole, you know, a civil rights rant. But that all ties into that eminent domain. And, you know, cultures and things have changed throughout the year. And well, that's a whole other discussion about what today's environment is involving, you know, systemic racism or stuff like that. And that's for a whole different show. But it does tie into eminent domain, though, whether we want to admit it or not, because I've been on those roads. So I can tell you firsthand that the government did screw a lot of communities in the inner cities. There's no doubt about that. So on that note, I'll let it bring it over to Bull and let Bull have, you know, share his final thoughts, and then I got to get off of here so I can get some sleep, gentlemen.
Hey, I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. I apologize. I probably wasn't as prepared as I normally am for these conversations. As we mentioned earlier, I mean, I'm a small farmer. We've been having a lot going on between my well dying last week and having to get it repaired this week, and multiple births on the farm, and unfortunately also some deaths. So it's sometimes we get to where life catches up with us, and that's what I love about what me and Jeremy are doing. I mean, we're coming out here and we're real. We are what you see is what you get with us, and I really appreciate you guys giving us your time, because that's the most valuable asset you have, is your time. So I do want to thank you all for coming on here and joining us. Look forward to our discussion next week. Hopefully we'll get a little bit more regular on it. But again, with between the farm and Jeremy's driving, sometimes things just don't work out the way we want them to. But thanks again, guys. I really appreciate y'all feedback. If you haven't done so already, come visit our party, the Constitutional Republic Party .us. Learn about us. Learn about our principles. Jeremy, excuse me. Jeremy hasn't mentioned it, but again, he mentioned that we had our convention. What he did not mention was the fact that he kind of got drafted into our leadership of to help build the party. And we're very, very happy to have him, because we very much value his voice. But thanks again, everybody, and I'll see you guys next week. And turn back over to Jeremy.
All right, appreciate it, Bull. And I'll give you a shout tomorrow. Usually I give him a shout after the show, but tonight I literally got to go to bed. But it's been one of those weeks, and like Bull said, I'm a trucker. He's a farmer, and we're trying to run a political party, and he's a busy man too, and we're all getting pulled in a million different directions, but this isn't our first rodeo. I've done this for the last half a decade, standing up and fighting for what I believe is right and for my beliefs and for those that be the voice for the voiceless. And I'll continue to do that until my dying breath, even though it affects my health sometimes. But me and Bull decided to start this radio show, The Constitutionalist, just to read the Constitution to you, just a light, you know, introduction to the Constitution. So you, not that I'm going to, me or him are going to explain every aspect of it, but you're going to at least know what it says, not completely what it means, but the gist of it. We'll dissect it and give you our opinions and our thoughts. And again, like Bull said earlier, you don't take this to the bank. Don't go to your court hearing tomorrow and say, "Well, I heard it on the Constitutionalist that you can say this or you can do that." Don't do that, please. I would feel horrible. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for bearing with us at the beginning of the show when we were trying to get our stuff together and we were a little bit discombobulated. But that, like Bull said, that'll happen on time to time. And thanks for sticking through the show with us. And we appreciate each and every one of you that take the time to listen to us. And we will see you next Tuesday night at 6 p.m. Central. And thank you so much for joining The Constitutionalist.